The cyber landscape is constantly evolving, creating new challenges and opportunities to defend against sophisticated attacks. At Northrop Grumman, we provide a wide range of capabilities to stay ahead of these threats. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/cyber.
Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian, and joining us today is retired United States Navy Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, who is the Executive Director of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission, chaired by Maine Independent Senator Angus King and Wisconsin Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher. Mark, thanks very much for joining us.
Vago, it's a real pleasure to be here again. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure, indeed. Last year, you sort of gave us a recap on where we were going to be legislatively. And we also was great because we did talk to Senator King as well as Congressman Gallagher on what some of their priorities are, because the commission has been extended. So you've got a little bit of job security there as well for another 2 years. It's obviously been a very, very big week for lawmakers. The $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, the Biden administration's signature COVID legislation, stimulus legislation has passed, and that has cyber components to it. And at the same time, the administration and lawmakers are working to figure out how best to respond to Russia's SolarWinds hack from last year, as well as China's more recent infiltration of Microsoft networks that actually may be an even bigger intrusion at the end of the day. First, talk to us about what are the cyber elements of the $1.9 trillion rescue package?
Well, thanks, Vago, and you're right. There is some cyber in here. It comes in two forms. The first is there's about $650 million given to CISA for use in building its own cybersecurity and information sharing capabilities, and the way and the manner in which it can support other agencies. This money is broken up into four different areas. One that is near and dear to the Cyberspace Solarium Commission's heart is improvement in their incident response and threat hunting capabilities. We had noted this as a problem with CISA in enacting its capabilities. It had very little threat hunting capacity. We actually passed a provision inside the NDAA that expanded their ability to do threat hunting on federal agencies to say that they could do it in basically a non-consensual, non-pre-alerting way, which of course is the best way to do threat hunting. It's not that effective if you call somebody up and tell them, I might be trying to break into your system next week at 1 p.m. But they still didn't have the capacity. And this brings them the money they need to improve their incident reporting or incident response and threat hunting capability. The second big area was it provided funding for some of their analytical capability. This, you know, probably gives them access to more threat streams and more, I'm going to guess contractors, but more people doing threat analysis for them. And you know, this was another area where we had pointed out CISA was just historically over its 3 years under-resourced in this capability. And it's one, again, where we had a provision in the National Defense Authorization Act that said, hey, come back to us with a kind of a force structure assessment of your ability to do certain missions. We had already determined that this analytical capability was one where they were short in resources. So getting this money now so early is fantastic. The other two are ones that have to do with kind of pass-through capability to other agencies. In other words, CISA will get the money and then they'll determine where's the best place to put it among the 98 to 100 federal departments and agencies that are out there. And believe me, those agencies are in a very uneven balance of IT network security. There's some that are better secured than others, and there's some that are very poorly secured. And so the first of those two is the ability to deploy detection sensors within them so that you have increased visibility to the cybersecurity threats in that department or agency's cyber ecosystem or environment. And that way you can more quickly determine there's adversary behavior going on. And the final one is kind of understanding what's the appropriate defensive network architecture of agencies. I hate to say zero trust because I don't know that that's where we're headed exactly just yet, but I do think this is gonna give CISA the funding they need to start to understand what is the long-term vision, the 3 to 5 year vision of what federal IT network security looks like. So that was the $650 million for CISA. Separate from that was, and I was very pleasantly surprised to see this make it through, and it really made it through the Senate side, and then was agreed to by the House. And that was putting $1 billion in the tech modernization fund. You know, this is going to give access to funds for those, again, those 98 to 100 federal departments and agencies that are out there to address, you know, their need to kind of like transform their IT network, to modernize their network. And the reason you have to do this is of those, again, 98 to 100 federal departments and agencies, very few of them, you know, day to day say, you know, my number one priority or my number two priority is cybersecurity. They have important number one through 10 priorities that are associated with the general mission of the department. And that lack of prioritization reflects in their annual budget request, which tend to, when the rubber meets the road and they have to meet the OMB number they were, you know, the number they were given by OMB for a federal budget, cybersecurity tends to take the salami slicing. By introducing this separate technology modernization fund, you're going to give the opportunity to these agencies to access funding. Now, it's going to be critical here that CISA, OMB, Office of Management and Budget, GSA, the General Services Administration, are making sure that these technology modernization fund requests are appropriate and properly prioritized. And so when I say there's this uneven development, we really need to make sure that those agencies on the lower end of cybersecurity readiness are being prioritized for the opportunity to get this money. And this is going to be a very interesting thing. The tech modernization funds existed for a number of years, but it has been at very low levels. As I recall, you know, 2 years ago, it was only a $25 million add back in. So, I mean, you know, clearly it has not been effectively utilized over the end of the Obama administration and the beginning and throughout the Trump administration. So it's going to take a lot of attention to detail to make sure this money is spent in an effective, prioritized manner.
One of the important elements of the Solarium Commission's report that for many people was the last pre-COVID event they attended, that was certainly the case for me and for many others, was obviously one throat to choke, right? A national cyber czar. We still don't have that, even though Ann Neuberger has moved from the NSA over to the National Security Council staff. We're still waiting for the announcement of that national cyber director to sort of give shape and more focus at a national level. But Mark, you know, the whole impetus for the Solarium Commission's work was to, you know, be the 9/12 commission to try to avoid 9/11. Right. And at the end of the day, we've seen SolarWinds. We've now seen the China's Hafnium unit attack Microsoft and actually be potentially an even larger breach at the end of the day. And then we've even got some hardware questions now, right, of compromised hardware. I know there's been some reporting on Apple's new chip and folks scratching their heads on how that may have been compromised. Ultimately, are we on the right track to move the needle as quickly as we need to move the needle here? As somebody who, you know, you've been working this issue for many years and the commission has been working on it. Are we poised to do the things we need to do with the urgency we need to do them with?
So we're not there yet, but I think all the indications from the Biden administration are strong. And what I mean by that is we always knew that if there was a change in presidency, the new president would restore the seniority of somebody in cyber. In other words, it was kind of a unique event with the kind of defenestration of first Tom Bossert and then right. Rob Joyce. So the we knew there was going to be some improvement. I look at it as three way. There's a ton to get done out here. So I hope there's no turf battles, but there's three kind of places where you can get some leadership on this. First is the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technologies, as you said, Ann Neuberger. Fantastic choice for this. The commission had the highest opinion of her when she was at National Security Agency Cybersecurity Division. And I think she's already done a good job in the seat there. So very happy with that. We're going to need a strong CISA director. You know, Representative Katko yesterday called the CISA director the kind of like quarterback of the defense. I think that's a terrific description of the role that person's going to play, the, you know, in leading the kind of federal agencies, supporting the federal agencies in their work. And that's why the $650 million was given to CISA in the bill we just mentioned. But additionally, in building kind of at the operational level, the public-private collaboration. The third person you need here is the National Cyber Director. And that person is going to achieve a few important goals for you. One, they're the ones that are role, you know, they're going to have the National Cyber Director staff will have a significant number of program analysts and budget analysts, because the staff can be as large as 75. That's a pretty large, you know, that's a good size for inside the White House or the Executive Office of the President, and certainly much bigger than anything the NSC could or would want to do. And that person is going to be constantly analyzing those kind of uneven 98 to 100 federal agencies and their budget requests, and keeping them honest to implementing the president's cyber strategy, national cyber strategy. So first is working that. And the second is, this would be the person that really, that helps make sure the big infrastructure, the joint collaborative environment, the integrated communication center that we build to work with the private sector is functioning properly, and that the sector-specific agencies, energy, treasury, EPA, are listening to CISA and doing their job in executing the government's relationship with our 16 critical national critical infrastructures. And the final thing I'll say is, this is the person that's there at minute one for the incident response. In other words, beforehand, they're doing the planning with the private sector about how do we respond to an incident. They're doing the planning with the state and local governments. They're doing the planning among the 98 federal departments and agencies about how we respond. And then they're coordinating the overall response to that. You're going to need that. And one thing the NCD can do that no one else can do in this is be answerable to Congress at the strategic level. Right now, you know, Ann Neuberger is fantastic. I'm sure she gives briefs up on the Hill. But when it's time to hold a hearing of who shot John, the National Security Council is not going to show up. And CISA is going to not be in a position to comment too much on other federal agencies' performance. But the National Cyber Director will be uniquely skilled to be the president's representative to the Hill on these important issues, and to go to each of the appropriations subcommittees and make the arguments for those cybersecurity investments that might be seen as unique or first time, you know, because they haven't been appropriately funded over the last decade. So I really think the National Cyber Director, the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cybersecurity and Emerging Technology, and the CISA Director are a team. And there's more than enough wrong out there. I don't think there'll be parochial turf fights, because there's too much turf already not defended. But the three of them get out there and do their jobs, we're going to have a significantly more organized federal government response, and we'll overall have a more secure and resilient national critical infrastructure.
Let me take you to the question of response. I know lawmakers have been struggling with this. I know the administration is working on how best to respond both to SolarWinds. We've seen some sanctions the administration has announced, and we understand that there is also an executive order that's in the mix. What's the right response to both of these incidents? Because they are pretty extraordinary, right? In this day and age.
I think what I'd say about the Russian espionage activity that started with SolarWinds, but I think spread to other companies as well, is that it was a massive cyber espionage effort. You know, really, the only thing I think of an equivalent scope or scale is the Chinese penetration of the Office of Personnel Management and the exfiltration of 24 million Americans. Personal data, you know, for government, current and former government, civil and military servants. Those two are really the two most egregious examples of cyber espionage. And in the case of SolarWinds, maybe not for how much was extracted, I'm not sure we know that yet, but for the target set they had available to them, whether they exploited them all or not. We do need to respond, but we need to respond in the recognition that it was an espionage event. And that might be that the response needs to be couched in the "you went too far," not that what you did was a changing in the norms or standards of behavior between states, because cyber espionage occurs. And I'm gonna go ahead and go out on a limb and say that probably we're doing cyber espionage against the Russians and Chinese as well. All right. With that in mind, what do? You determine how out of scope was this with appropriate action. And then I think you tailor, in this case, non-military, non-cyber tools for that. So that would be sanctions, indictments, diplomatic activity. I think I would hold military, both kinetic and non-kinetic, so cyber tools in reserve in this case. And the reason is that they need to be utilized, when someone crosses the real threshold, which is the installation of malware or the actual disruption, degradation, or destruction of critical infrastructure, particularly lifeline critical infrastructure, water, electric, telecommunications, hospital services. And I'll tell you, what kind of worries me is the reports we're hearing from India that potentially China did that to them during the crisis in the Galwan Valley, that one of their responses was at least some level of cyber intrusion. And then malicious activity that caused disruption of electrical power grid performance in India. That would really worry me. And if something like that were done against the United States, our response would be different. So to circle back on the SolarWinds, I'd probably confine myself to those. One other option, if you really feel the scale was too bad, is to use a form of our cyber tool, the persistent engagement, and the idea, the concept that one of the elements of that might be to kind of create friction or degrade or disrupt the ability of the Russian SVR, their intelligence agency that purportedly did SolarWinds, disrupt their infrastructure. So it makes it harder for them to do more activity. But again, I would generally reserve that for other kinds of responses, but certainly there's no limits on what you can do in sanctions based on this.
Mark, we've got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask you about the Cyber Diplomacy Act. What is it? What does it mean? Why is it important?
So the Cyber Diplomacy Act, which just passed through the House Foreign Affairs Committee and is going to be on the House floor, and I hope we'll get a good bipartisan hearing there, as it did in the committee, and then we'll do the same in the Senate, is important because it reorganizes the State Department in the sense that it makes cyber a cyber bureau, which is a larger organization than we've had dedicated to cyber, and it would put it at a cross-cutting level, either reporting to the Secretary, Deputy Secretary, or the Undersecretary for Political Affairs. This is critical because the State Department needs to get more focused and organized on all the elements of cybersecurity and emerging technology that the department has to deal with, whether it's working international norms and standards organizations where the Chinese have been eating our lunch, whether it's working with allies and partners about how do you attribute things and what's the appropriate response to malicious activity behavior, or whether it's working on trying to create safe and secure environments overseas where countries don't rely on Chinese installed technological equipment, particularly 5G, that sacrifices the country's security and privacy to the Chinese government. So it's important for the State Department to be properly organized and for this position to be properly placed. And the Cyber Diplomacy Act of 2021 does exactly that. So I'm hoping to see it passed in the House soon and taken up in the Senate shortly after that.
Fingers crossed. And very, very briefly, quantum computing has been something that folks have said is going to be a game-changing technology. We've had a couple of programs on how China has been improving its capabilities at the end of the day. Any progress from this administration to try to make that a signature national effort, given that quantum and AI both are top Chinese priorities, given that the leap ahead and game-changing nature of the technology?
So I think there's been a lot more discussion of AI than quantum computing, but you're exactly right to highlight it. The commission was concerned about this more from the defense of our own cryptological systems. In other words, the idea that if an adversary had quantum computing and was trying to break your communications, things that might take years or decades to break with normal technology could be broken in seconds with quantum computing. And that's certainly the promise of quantum computing to our adversaries. And so our response was that, are we doing enough now in investments, even though that capability may be 5 or 7 years away for an adversary, don't we need to take investments now to build up, you know, to have a better understanding of how you protect yourself against that 5 to 7 years now? And of course, the answer is yes. But I also think, you know, in many, especially in Department of Defense budgets, sometimes the future investment, you know, falls victim to current need. And potentially the kind of money that we need to be investing in that defensive response to quantum computing has been being chipped away at to pay for current problems and challenges with legacy cryptological systems. So we specifically asked for the administration to provide us a strategy for how they're going to deal with this. And it'll be due later this calendar year. Once we have that, we'll be in a better position to determine if the Biden administration is stepping off in the right direction on quantum computing, at least from the defensive point of view.
Mark, it's always an honor and pleasure having you on Fairwind's following season. Look forward to having you back on again. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Vago. It's been a real pleasure.
Everyone is a contributor at Northrop Grumman, and every day is an opportunity to help defend our nation and our allies. Visit our careers page at ngc.com to learn about joining the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions team.